I'm an English professor at St. Olaf College in Northfield, Minnesota. And here at Holden Village, largely to talk about literature. But I also like to talk about the philosophy of education, because my career is in education. And I think that there are some important things that we all need to think about and talk about in education in this country, not only for ourselves, but for our children and those who come after us. I'll apologize at the outset for my voice. I've had a bad cold for a couple of days, and it may give out before the hour is up, but that may be to your advantage. One thing I would like, I have a kind of selfish motive in this topic. I'm interested in your ideas about education in general and education at what we call a church college in particular. I teach at a college of the church, and I've been an administrator for 6 years at St. Olaf as well. So I'm especially interested in your perceptions of what a church college graduate can do or should be able to do upon graduation. So I'm not here just to talk to you, but I brought along my pen and some blank paper to take down some of your ideas. And I expect that you'll challenge some of the things which I have to say, because they aren't ideas that are universally accepted. So please be ready to interrupt and to offer suggestions at any point. Now, the first I want to say a few things about liberal arts education, and then about Christian liberal arts education after that. But perhaps I should give a cautionary note because of the title of this presentation, and assure you that I'm not going to talk about jobs very much, because that's a particular view of education that causes certain problems. Let me say at the outset that I and all of my colleagues at St. Olaf cherish for our students, for our graduates, that they be gainfully employed doing something they like to do. I think that that's true of everyone in the business of education. But we are not in a position to employ very many graduates. That is, we do, a college employs some people, but our basic business is to help people learn and be employable by somebody else. And therefore, our main concern is in what people do before they undertake employment. But this doesn't mean that we are indifferent to what kinds of jobs or that our graduates get jobs. But I just want to make one statement about the fact that our main goal is not to see to it that every graduate has a job. There are educational institutions who have that as perhaps a primary goal. And those are places we generally call vocational institutes or vocational colleges, whose goal is to provide what I prefer to call training rather than education, to provide training in certain specific skills that lead to certain specific jobs upon graduation. And most of these institutions sell themselves by telling what percentage of their graduates get the job in their chosen field right after graduation. And the percentage is often very high. Graduates of vocational institutes generally get jobs at a much higher rate than those of liberal arts institutions or even the universities. But part of the reason is those graduates are trained for a specific job in the job market, and therefore they are trained just for that when they graduate, and employers tend to hire them. So if one is interested, if one's main goal in going to college is to have a certain job the day after graduation, perhaps the best place to go is to a vocational college or vocational institution. But that's not the only reason we assume that people go to college, and especially to liberal arts colleges, which most of our church colleges are. And I hope it's not the main reason that people go to colleges of the church. Now to the issue of a liberal arts education. There are several different attitudes about liberal arts education and much disagreement about what that term means. And is what are the liberal arts? If we all agreed on it, then every liberal arts college would have perhaps the same graduation requirements. We'd all require the same studies because liberal arts means that you study this and this and this. But that's not the case, even though it was close to that some centuries ago. So we differ a great deal in liberal arts colleges about exactly what our goals are. But there's been a great disenchantment in this country in recent years about college education in general, and especially the liberal arts college. And the disenchantment has come from several places. There's been, a kind of national disenchantment about college education because the graduates of colleges and universities don't seem to be any better people than people who don't go to college at all. That is, people pointed during Watergate to some of the villains, if you want to call them that, some of the participants in that escapade, and said, well, look, here are people who are graduates of some of our good liberal arts colleges, where supposedly the whole history of liberal learning and of culture and civilization were taught, or at least presented, and yet these people are able to go about their professional work without ever asking the question, what's right? What is the appropriate and proper thing to do? They were selfish instead of humane. They were engaged in all sorts of illegal actions when they were entrusted with the welfare of the citizenry. If that's the kind of people who are graduating from our colleges, why should we support our educational institutions? Then there's been disenchantment on the part of young people because you have learned that having a degree from college does not enable you to have the job that you want upon graduation. Now, as recently as when I was in college, that was not the case. I graduated from college in 1961, and we didn't worry about if we were going to get a job when we graduated. We discussed which job we wanted to have. We debated which job would be more lucrative or more satisfying or provide more service to humanity. We knew that we would have a choice of various kinds of employment. I have just about stopped asking college seniors what they're going to do next year, or college graduates, what are you doing? Because there's such awkward silence. Some of you are experiencing that right now. Others of you have experienced it. You know people who have. That is, it's awkward to be a college graduate and not have a kind of vocation, a job, a career that you are engaged in or about to embark upon. And you find yourself still kind of searching around for your future. That wasn't the case 18 years ago when we graduated. It was just a matter of which things we were going to choose. So there's been a major change. You people have discovered something that wasn't a fact when Karen and I were in college, and that is that being a college graduate does not mean that you are you have a leading edge and have a virtual assurance of the employment of your choice upon graduation. That has caused disenchantment with the college education as well. So from several sources, there has been this kind of disenchantment. Well, what then do we have to say in favor of a liberal arts education? Well, some of us take what is a kind of idealist position. That is, we have an ideal of what a liberal arts education means and what it can be. And that is, very simply, oversimplified, something like this. That a liberal arts education is a freeing education. That is, it frees us from the limitations of ignorance. That is, it makes us free to do lots of things, to understand lots of things that we might not understand without this kind of education. And yet it's very frustrating to say, well, it also frees us not to have a job. So right now, we have this tension in all of American education between education for a job, what we call vocational education, and this kind of ideal liberal arts education where you become wise and cultured and sophisticated, but perhaps unemployable. And it's especially in the liberal arts colleges where it's difficult handling this tension because, as I say, we all want our graduates to be employed in satisfying and worthwhile work. And yet, we recognize that the economic situation of our country right now is such that that doesn't happen for all of our graduates. So we're faced with pressures to become more vocationally oriented. That is, to make our graduates more employable in specific jobs, as opposed to the purist position of wanting to see to it that this ideal liberal education is still the primary goal. Well, let me tell you one thing that happened at St. Olaf a few years ago that put the issue very clearly for all of us. St. Olaf had invited the vice president of a major firm in Minneapolis, the vice president in charge of personnel, to talk to the St. Olaf faculty on the topic, what an employer looks for in a liberal arts graduate. And most of us came because we were interested in what employers look for, so we could help see to it that our graduates had these characteristics. He spoke to us for half an hour and then summarized with an acronym. He said, and this summarized his whole speech, he said, what we look for in a liberal arts graduate is PLUP. P-L-U-P. PLUP. He said, that stands for these things. P, for personality. We want somebody who is vivacious and pleasing and fun to be around, an interesting person, and personality. L stands for looks. Now he said, I don't want you to misunderstand this. He said, we do hire ugly people once in a while. He said, but by and large, we want people who will be pleasing to the public, who I have a certain amount of attractiveness, if not in just in the physical features, at least in a combination of physical features and that personality that perhaps can can make a relatively unattractive person still be enjoyable. But looks is fairly important, so we look for that. U stands for a usable skill. And by this he meant, because we pressed him on it, he said that something like being able to do accounting, computer programming, some particular technical manipulative skill. And by this he did not mean being able to think, being able to solve problems, because we ask him that. No, it's a usable skill that's immediately able to be put to work. And the fourth thing, the final P, was pull. You've got to know somebody. It helps if you know somebody who's in the company already, if your father is vice president of the company, so forth. That was it. Those are the four things that he said we look for. Plup. And I don't think I'll ever forget that because of what it omitted, including almost everything that we at a liberal arts college cherish for our graduates. It seemed to be so crass and brought everything down to the lowest common denominator, including some characteristics like looks, for instance, that we think is totally irresponsible and immoral to consider as a major hiring factor. But that was the case, and in an hour of discussion with this man afterwards, he never backed down an inch. That was what they looked for. Well, you see what kind of pressure that puts upon both students and faculty and administrators at a liberal arts college. If we talk about developing character and intelligence and flexibility and resourcefulness and so forth, and do happen to help people develop that, and you go out into a world where people are looking for plup and before they'll hire you, why, we're having a great problem. Well, one of the key points that I want to make this morning is that if one allows oneself to fall into the trap of evaluating your college education, or say choosing your college, on the basis of what you'll be doing the day after you graduate, I think that we make a severe mistake. Christians, if anyone, should be able to take the longer and the broader view. That is, we have a sense of history and of the future and of the relative importance of our activities in this world and afterwards, so that we ought not to fall prey to the very tempting and economically pressing concern for what we do the day after graduation. Now again, we all hope that our graduates are employed the day after graduation, if they wish to be. But to have that as the primary focus forces you to try to develop pluck instead of those other things that those of us at a liberal arts college think one should develop. Well, yesterday while I was lying in bed and partway delirious with the medicine I was taking, such that I wish I had never come up with this, I decided to come up with my own little acronym for what a liberal arts graduate ought to develop. I've gotten in trouble before working with acronyms, where you take the first letter of a bunch of words and make a different word out of it. I don't know if I should report this. I enjoy games with words and letters. 2 years ago, I was on the Women's Affairs Committee at St. Olaf, which was the committee with the responsibility of looking over all those issues that related to problems of women in the student body and the faculty and the staff, grounds crew, everyone. And we were tired of all the innuendos about being the Women's Affairs Committee, that we were in charge of Women's Affairs. So we changed the name of the committee to the Committee on the Status of Women. And then people began to refer to us as SOW, Status of Women, S-O-W, SOW. So we decided as a committee, the committee was mostly women, we decided that we would come up with another name for ourselves. We all agreed that before the next meeting we'd go home and think up some new acronyms. Well, I enjoyed doing this, and I came up with a list of 10 that we typed up, and I ran off enough copies for everyone on the committee. And
they were all bad news.
Well, some of them were witty, I thought. I mean, there was one I remember was the Board Opposing Sexism on Manitou, which comes out bosom. And they're all in that vein. Some of the women on the committee came up with ones that I wouldn't repeat to you. Anyway, it was just a little in-joke amongst those of us on the committee out of our frustration for trying to work with women's concerns at college. And someone got a hold of one of these copies and had it printed up in the campus newsletter. And the result was that there were scathing letters signed by a dozen people, you know, about the blatant sexist attitudes expressed by the writer of these things. So I learned my lesson about how to be careful about those things. Anyway, back to general education, liberal arts. I came up with, instead of plop, I came up with price. You know, we always talk about you get out of something whatever you put into it. And one thing you put into a private liberal arts education is a big price. So price is something you ought to get out. And here are some characteristics that I think we cherish for liberal arts graduates. One, the P is problem solving. That is, I think it's important in virtually any vocation that one undertakes, any job, that you be able to solve problems. That is, that you be able to recognize, identify issues at stake, figure out how to solve something that will lead to a desired result. That's perhaps more important than looks, some other factors. The R is resourcefulness. Another thing that one ought to do is figure out how to find and use resources that are available. How to go out and get and discover and find the things that you need in order to carry out a certain task. We got into a discussion a couple of weeks ago with in another session about facts. I had been talking about education and had minimized the importance of facts in contrast to some other things like resourcefulness, and was scolded for saying that you don't need to have facts. I don't mean to suggest that. Much of what we work with are facts, but the point is that some facts become quickly obsolete and replaced by other facts, especially the way in which our information and knowledge is moving in this time in history. And it's dangerous, I think, for persons to be trained in a specific job or to know certain facts and not know how to be resourceful in using them. Think, for instance, of those people who trained themselves to be blacksmiths or farriers or harness makers in 1900 and went into the world having learned that trade and very quickly found themselves without employment because the automobile suddenly became the primary mode of transportation. I've known a man who I met when he was 70, one of those persons who had just battered around for most of his adult life picking up odd jobs and raking people's lawns and living from hand to mouth. And when I inquired into his background, I discovered that he had been trained as a harness maker. He'd been apprenticed, which was the vocational school of those days, as a harness maker just at the turn of the century. And within a decade, the need for harness makers diminished so rapidly that he couldn't find employment, and he didn't have the resourcefulness, the flexibility. He hadn't been freed from his limitations, as a liberal arts education attempts to do, so that he could adjust and adapt and develop a different vocation. Okay, the I of Price is imagination. Actually, I've got two here, imagination and integrity. One of the things that leads to great success in any venture and vocation is imagination. That is, to be able to use your mind not to work with the given facts, but to leap to possible solutions, other ways of perceiving a given situation or a set of circumstances, to be alive to the possibilities in life rather than simply working with limitations. And then the other possibility for I is integrity, which means a number of things. In one sense, it means having yourself all together. It's what in the current parlance is having your head together. Knowing who you are, knowing what your values are, living out your values instead of being moved by the whims of the rest of the people around you. Having a sense of being, of identity, and of a way of life, and integrating those things so that you're living out the things you believe. Some people simply don't have integrated lives, and this causes them great problems. They're unable to carry out in their day-to-day behavior those kinds of beliefs which they have intellectually accepted. The C of Price is commitment. Now, this is one thing that I find strangely missing from the goals of many liberal arts colleges and general education programs in the country. I think that a person who graduates from college without a sense of commitment, either to a perspective about life and reality, to service to humankind, commitment to personal values or religious values, who simply is drifting with the tide, that person, I think, is going to have difficulty in many ways. And I think that those who achieve important things are those who not only believe certain things, but have a firm commitment to those things about oneself, about the world, and that commitment leads them to a persistence and an energy that helps them carry them out. And then the E of Price, I had three terms here that any one of which you could use, or all three together: enthusiasm, excitement, and energy. I have seen graduates who in job interviews have been so flat, so bored with life and with themselves and with what they are applying for, that I would be amazed if any employer did hire them. One simply ought, after 4 years of a college education, ought to have some enthusiasm and excitement about something that one has encountered, about something that one would like to do, and that this excitement and the commitment provides a kind of energy for doing things and carrying them out. But some graduates don't exhibit that at all, and appear to be worn out already and ready to retire instead of ready to start a career. So that's my acronym. It probably could undergo lots of revisions once my head is clearer. But problem solving, resourcefulness, imagination and integrity, commitment and enthusiasm, excitement and energy. Now what you may notice is that I didn't include in there intelligence or facts or anything which some people would identify as a usable skill. Partly because, as I mentioned before, the materials with which we work, the jobs which we might get after graduation are so changeable. And we ourselves are so changeable that it's dangerous to put all of one's educational energies into one basket, into preparing oneself for one thing. Even in the days when every liberal arts graduate did get a job upon graduation, if she wanted one, within 5 years, 50% of those graduates were working in a different field from what they majored in as undergraduates. Now, what does that tell us? That the decisions we make as undergraduates often are not the permanent decisions about the field in which we want to spend our life working. That is, you keep right on learning after graduation. Interests change. Circumstances put you into a different situation. You discover something else. And you want to be ready and able to make that change to something that you didn't prepare yourself for as an undergraduate. Secondly, much of the specific job training that one needs, even in professions, is provided after you graduate from college. If you prepare for a certain job as an undergraduate, you may find your employer, even in this field for which you prepared, wanting you to be retrained to the employer's system of doing it instead of your college professor's perceptions of how you ought to be trained. So much of the specific training you do for certain jobs happens after you graduate anyway, and much of the decision about what field you end up with over the long range changes after you graduate. And that suggests that it's dangerous to put too much emphasis on your major field as an undergraduate. Therefore, what I've proposed to some college faculties is a complete revamping of the kind of advice that we give to undergraduates. Those of you who've recently been in college are familiar with the current language. What we call general education is what gets covered by the distribution requirements. General education means those things that you have to study that aren't in your major field. That is, you have to study some natural science and some social science and some of the humanities and the arts. And the graduation requirements force you to do that no matter what you major in. And the students with whom I register and whom I advise are always saying, well, I want to get this graduation requirement out of the way and then get that graduation requirement out of the way so that you can focus on the major.
Focus on what, sir?
Focus on the major. Yeah. You know, English or biology or history. And it's the what's really the core of a liberal arts education, what ought to be the core, is what people want to get out of the way, as if it were an impediment, and get at that zeroing in on the major, which probably is not even going to be in the field where you spend your life's work anyway. So I've proposed that we require that people get their major out of the way in the first couple of years, and then have to spend your more mature undergraduate years doing general education, the liberal studies. Studying, those of you who are majoring in English, Then you study natural science and social science, vice versa. Anyway, we ought to put our priorities where we claim they are, but we faculty are largely at fault for this, because we're the ones, it's the English professors, who are telling you, get your natural science requirement out of the way, and then you can take my course and this, my course and that, and you'll be able to spend all your time with the English faculty. And we really ought to reverse it. Well, I am getting at the church college now, because I think that the church college takes a very special view about this whole matter of vocations and the goals of a liberal arts education. I think virtually all of our church colleges are basically liberal arts colleges. I prefer to use the term a college of the church. It's difficult to talk about a Christian college or Christian biology or Christian English. We are colleges of the church because as colleges we're carrying out the same mission that the church with a capital C carries out. This is why we associate ourselves, colleges like St. Olaf and Valparaiso and Pacific Lutheran, we associate ourselves with the church because we see ourselves carrying out the same mission as the church, the synod, or the Christian church is carrying out, and that is to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, we don't operate in the exact same way that the church operates. And this is what causes lots of confusion with people about what ought to be going on at a church college and what professors at church colleges ought to be doing. A college of the church is one of the educational arms of the church. And the church, if it's exercising good stewardship of its resources, ought to be trying to provide as good education, as good a college education as it can provide. But it does it in a different way from other good liberal arts colleges who are not colleges of the church. And that is we try to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ in certain ways. I think the most distinctive ways are these. We worship together regularly. Just as worship is a central part of life here at Holden Village, because this is an institution of God's church, so it's true at colleges of the church. At most universities and at many private liberal arts colleges, there is no such thing as daily chapel or daily worship or even regular worship at all. But at colleges of the church, we worship together because we are worshiping communities and we want the gospel to be proclaimed regularly and publicly in a community way on the campus. Secondly, most of us have as one of the requirements for graduation some study of religion. And that is because the College of the Church believes that all truth has as its base God's truth, that is, the revelation that God has provided us. And we understand all the facts and information and theories that we present in the light of the scriptures. Therefore, we want all of our graduates to be relatively literate in religion and theology. So we do require that they do some study of religion. It's not that we're trying to teach them how to be Lutherans. We want them to teach them how to think about the religious implications of everything they do. And the third way in which we differ is in the activities of the people at the college, the students, the faculty, the administration. This is the hardest one to to handle. Some people believe, for instance, that all professors at a church college should be preaching in some way in the classroom, or that there should be, that there is Christian economics, and that at a church college you get Christian economics rather than non-Christian. Well, I believe that my job as an English professor at St. Olaf is to teach English literature as well, and in much the same way I would teach it at another college that had no connection with the church. But the faculty at a church college generally do profess in various ways, and sometimes in the classroom, their Christian faith, which is different from teaching or preaching or proselytizing. When you profess something, you make a statement about your stand or your belief on a certain issue, which is a legitimate thing to do in the classroom, even about religion. But it's a different thing from trying to teach a certain dogma, to a religious dogma, to the students in a biology class, or trying to proselytize and make Christians out of all the students in a biology class. So I do try to distinguish between teaching and professing and preaching, which are three activities that could be carried out in a classroom, but not all of them should be. But the faculty and administration and the students at a college of the church generally believe, or at least accept, the fact that learning is done in the context of God's revelation to us, that we ground all wisdom in the wisdom that comes from God and the revelation from God, and that we behave in the classroom and outside the classroom in a way that that kind of understanding of the world demands of us, which does not mean that we are always preaching in the classroom. So we try to hire at a college of the church faculty who are capable and who desire taking this attitude toward their subject matter, toward their students, and toward the institution at which they work. And then finally, a statement about vocation. We talked about the tension between getting jobs and the kind of ideal liberal arts education. Those of us who are Christians talk about vocation in the sense of calling. The Latin word means to be called. And we often talk about the fact that calling is something that a minister talks about, being called by a congregation to a church, or being called by the Holy Spirit into the ministry. In a sense, all of us are called to do some particular life's work. The frustrating thing is, it's so difficult to hear that call. One of the toughest things that you people of college age, in your 20s, have is trying to discern that call to do something, some particular work. For me, I didn't figure it out, I didn't hear it till I was 27. That may give some of you who haven't reached that age some hope. Karen and I still wonder what we're going to be when we grow up. But I think that I heard the calling right finally when I was 27. But what we as Christians believe is that God has one calling for all of us, and that is that we be His children. That's our calling. That's our vocation in life. One job of the College of the Church is to help all of us hear that calling and make it a central part of our life, so that we live out our lives not only as good citizens of the world, which is a major goal of a liberal arts college, but as children of God, which is what the College of the Church wants to make sure we hear as a calling. So in one sense, the church college is a vocational school, in the sense that we try to proclaim that calling and have all of us accept it. Then there's that other calling that we listen for: what particular job do we take? And what the College of the Church proclaims is that if you accept that major calling, vocation, of being a child of God in the world, then it's not going to matter so much what particular job you take. And it may not matter too much if it takes a while before you find that, before you hear that calling, before you figure it out. We all get impatient, and we need money to do the things we want to do and even to live comfortably. But it's a mistake to take any old job and live with it the rest of your life if it isn't that kind of job in which you can live with satisfaction in service to humankind and as a child of God, without being discouraged with what you're doing. In other words, perhaps the P in the price here should be patience. That it's very difficult to get that second calling, that calling to a certain vocation that will give you lifelong satisfaction exactly at the time that you want it. I often talk with students who are frustrated over just picking their major, and colleges have certain deadlines for picking your major by the end of the sophomore year at least, and so forth. And to me, picking a major is like falling in love with someone you're going to marry. You're in a sense picking a lifelong, you hope it'll be a lifelong a lifelong activity, something that you're going to do the rest of your life that will provide satisfaction and that you'll stay with. That's what we all think of anyway when we pick a major. And you can't anymore have that decision come to you by a deadline than you can pick your spouse. Then you can say, by next April 1st, I'm going to have my lifetime spouse picked out. I'm going to have fallen in love with that person, and from there on in, we'll be together. Some people, it does happen early. Other people, it doesn't happen till later. And we have to be patient sometimes about how soon it is we're going to figure out that lifetime work. And what many of us have to do is to take other jobs, temporary jobs, jobs that we're sure we're not going to keep forever, and keep searching and keep listening for that life's work that is going to sustain us to our last days. But if we have accepted the calling of being God's children and trust in His wisdom and His participation in our life, I think that we can more easily live with that and believe that we need not worry about the morrow, but that He is looking after us, and that we will find our ultimate job as well as we have found our vocation of being Christian people in this world.